I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended John Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
And to truly serve your people and to, again, help elevate them and help them to see and experience heights and a vision for their lives and for the organization that they could not have seen without you, right? And so I think that largely informs my approach to leadership. And when I serve and I coach teams, I really try to help other leaders see that, because there is so much conflict. I mean, you all probably experience this. There is so much conflict in organizations. There's team dynamics. You know, there are people who don't get along. There's personality conflicts. There's, you know, lack of resource, scarcity. And so we have teams who are arguing and fighting over resources. And a lot of leaders can get to the point where they just are tired. I deal with so many tired leaders who are just tired of the frustration. They're tired of the conflict and they just want to throw in the towel. And the only reason why they don't throw in the towel is because they need that check, because they're 5 years away from retirement, because, you know, they are financially, you know, in debt and they just need that money. And so they don't, but they hate going to work every day. And what I try to do is help those leaders understand that you are in this position because you have the great privilege of coming alongside of people and helping that person see something for themselves that they could not see without you. So even just today, I was coaching a leader and I asked them, I said, you know what? There's a lot of conflict on your teams. When you speak to, next time you go to your team and you have one-on-ones, ask them about themselves. Like, find out what's going on in their life. You know, ask them what their dream is, right? Do they see themselves in this organization forever? How does this organization serve their greater purpose? You know, where do they see themselves, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now? Really try to position yourself as not a buddy-buddy type of leader, but as a leader who sincerely and genuinely cares about their people, right? Yes. And you can't get there unless you have like a servant orientation mindset, right?
Yeah. Got it. Robert, do you want to take the next questions? I mean, I this could be an 8-hour podcast easily. I mean, everything that comes out of Seth's mouth is gold. Yeah. And I just want
to, I need my wife to hear that. Hold on.
I know. I just want to pick it up,
sure,
man.
Make sure she listens to this podcast.
Go clip that one part and send it to her.
Yeah. She'll already know that we're in the tank for you. She'll be like, oh, those are your friends of yours. You're not fooling me. Anybody you've met 10 minutes from now, 10 minutes ago, does not feel that way about you. These are clearly people, you know. At any rate, Robert, why don't you move on to the next set of questions? I did want to ask about overcoming a personal or organizational challenge or a personal challenge, because I think that does go into a lot of what makes a leader. But maybe we move on and then come back to that, Robert, or do you want to address that?
Yeah, let's address that. Go ahead.
Okay. So again, like I think we've talked about what goes into the character and the makeup of a leader, the education, motivational experiences, influences from other people, but there's also the I guess the real part of life, the hard knocks that we take in our personal lives. Do you feel comfortable maybe talking about a personal experience that you've overcome and how that possibly influenced you as a leader, especially as when I hear you talk, Seth? There's so much empathy that I hear that, I mean, you talk about your passion for justice and your passion for, you know, helping people to realize that they're serving. I mean, I'm getting just a sense that this is not just the pieces that come from the influence. I'm sensing that there have been some blows that life, sure, that life has, I just, you know, a lot of people don't get that that real sense of empathy without having walked a little bit in someone else's shoes. I mean, you said it earlier, you know, ask your employee, you know, what is going on in your life? You know, where do you see yourself? That being able to tap that empathy, I feel, comes from some struggle. So can you talk a little bit about that if you're comfortable?
Yeah, for sure. I think I've experienced it professionally and personally. I mean, having led a church, and a lot of people may know just by, you know, kind of intuitively that churches are not easy organizations. You know, you have teams of volunteers, more or less, who have been there longer than you, at least within our institution. They've been there longer than you, and they're going to be there after you. And so trying to lead them can at times be very difficult. I think for the majority of my leadership in a church, I was characterized as an individual who just didn't care about people. Like, I was so task oriented, and I was so kind of like, we have to accomplish the goal. This is our vision. This is where we're going. So, you know, if there's dead bodies along the way, we're just going to step over them, and we're going to keep it moving. Right. Yeah. And so I think I was characterized, rightly so, right, as that type of leader. And so I think understanding that, sitting with, you know, myself, with coaches, having a coach myself, you know, engaging in assessments where I'm hearing, doing like a 360 assessment where I'm hearing the feedback from my team, and they're kind of sharing with me how I'm showing up in their life and how they're experiencing me, and just really being forced to sit with who I present myself to be and how people experience me. It forced me on multiple times on many levels to really come to this realization that says, Seth, if you're going to lead this team or any team, you have to lead from the heart. You have to first care about people. It doesn't mean that you have to hang out and go to the movies and be best friends with people, but people have to know that you care. And if they don't know that you care, you all know the saying, people don't care what you know until they know that you care, right? Yeah. If they don't know that you care, it will be extremely hard to lead them anywhere, right? And so I think through my own kind of hitting my head against the wall, right, several times as a leader, I've finally gotten that lesson where I have to slow down, I have to come alongside people, I have to get to know them, and kind of understand, not from a manipulative perspective, but just from an emotional, you know, how can I help this person get the most out of their life, right? What levers do I need to pull? And I'm not going to know which levers I need to pull unless I genuinely know you and genuinely are concerned and care about you, right?
And Unbox to Lead, we call that, if I could just jump in, we call that showing up as an authentic leader. Yeah. And one of the things we focus, I'm hearing this come from you, and please don't forget your thought. We focus on the leader focusing on self, as you just mentioned, and I know this from my pastoral experience. I focus so much on getting things done that I didn't focus on how I was showing up, focusing on how I was bringing calm into high emotional situations, how I was managing my own emotions, managing my own life, managing my own family, really. And it's almost counterintuitive to say you're paid to build an organization, to grow an organization, but the best way to do that is by focusing on yourself as the leader and how you show up and how you function, how you interact with your team and things of that nature. But as I'm listening to you, that sounds as if that's the core of what a leader does or should do.
I will go out there, and I'm sure that there's data to support me. I will go out there to say the most effective leaders are probably the most self-aware leaders.
I love that term.
Right. So I think as a leader, we have to be aware of how people experience us. Right. You know, I cannot just go in and be leading and there's casualties along the way. Right. And it's like, well, we'll just find someone else to replace you. Like, that might get the job done for a season, but it's not sustainable. It's not legacy leadership. Right. And so I have to be self-aware. So, you know, having honest conversations with my team, doing 360s, getting feedback, right? Listening to coaches and people that I have submitted myself to help me grow, listening to their feedback has helped. That's on the professional side. On the personal side, I think everyone goes through a personal crisis. Some of it may be, you know, unfortunately, you know, you may have gone through a divorce. Other people may have lost a loved one, lost a child along the way. I think everyone kind of has their own personal you know, to use a Christian term, cross that you carry, some type of scar. For me, it was the birth of my first daughter. I mean, she was born at 24 weeks of age. That's of 24 weeks. That's 16 weeks early, extremely premature. Mm-hmm. And just the 5 months in and out of the NICU, being flown in helicopters from one hospital to the next, and just that entire journey really, I think, sensitized me and really made me just more human from the standpoint of in touch with my emotions and less about the task and more about the people. I mean, seeing your daughter in an incubator and then just the challenges that have come with her release. I mean, she's 9 years old today, but she still has, you know, cerebral palsy and some developmental challenges. And so just kind of walking with her through life, as difficult as it is, I think that also has on a significant level impacted how I lead, right? And impacted just how I like to show up now, a real human being, an authentic person, willing to kind of let my guard down and to really see that the team member that I'm working with, my employee that I'm working with, that, yeah, they may be sitting in their cubicle right now, but they have probably a world going on at home that they brought with them into work. And if I'm not aware of what's going on in their home on some level and how that's impacting them, like, I'm totally missing an opportunity to serve that person to their highest level.
Wow. That's all I can say. It's just wow. I wanted to kind of dig a little deeper with you, and when these conversations are so profound, I want to dig a little deeper. When we talk about you as an organizational leader, and I want you to think with me for a moment on one particular obstacle, whatever that obstacle is, that you had to overcome. It could be in your current setting, or it could be in your pastoral setting, or in your consulting and coaching. But I want you to think about, an organizational leadership obstacle that you overcame. What would you consider to be, as you talked about some personal things, what is a specific organizational obstacle that you overcame?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I think there's so many to choose from. I mean, specifically in my current role and with organizations and teams that I work with, I think there is a significant challenge when it comes to how do we build healthy cultures. Mm-hmm. That's something that I have, even going back to my pastoral days, like always kind of wrestled with, is how do we build healthy cultures? How do we build a team where people want to show up, they enjoy showing up, they're motivated by some type of intrinsic value? It's not reward based, right? It's not because of the check or because of the bonus at the end of the year, but they're there for the greater good of whatever that purpose is for the organization. I think that's probably been my great life work, is really trying to overcome negative toxic cultures and help those teams experience culture transformation. I've been there on teams, and the way that I have overcome it, and again, it's not a magic wand overcome it. Like, you wave this wand and all your problems are solved. No, it's almost like, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. It's like a daily dose. Like, it's not a silver bullet fix, but the way that I have worked through with teams and my own leadership, and then as a consultant, is really trying to appeal to, again, using that term, the higher North Star. Like, what is the vision? What's the goal that we're here for? And then once we can all agree and have some type of shared vision, then asking the question, what type of organization or what type of team must we be to reach that goal?
So let me dig a little deeper with you, because as you shared a moment ago, when you and Raphael were talking, pastors are essentially executive directors of nonprofits,
sure,
that provide spiritual care and community services.
Yep.
That's what we do. Yep. And so you're right. There's that culture thing. And I want to dig a little deeper just around the whole issue of culture. And as you have gone into, and of course, I'm not going to ask you for any particular names, but as you've gone into congregations that were struggling with trying to become clear about what type of culture they want to have and didn't have the healthiest culture. How did you take action in that setting?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So culture is a byproduct of values, mm-hmm. right? It's so funny to me because, you know, every leader out there, they know, you know, mission, vision, values, right? Yeah, we need to have mission, vision, values. But I think probably 99% of them, and, you know, I'm probably being facetious, but, you know, a great majority of leaders don't understand how powerful mission, vision, and values are.
Yeah.
The average leader sees mission, vision, and values as something that goes on our website, something that goes on a wall somewhere, something that goes in a booklet or bulletin that we look at once a quarter. They don't see it as something that actually informs and influences the everyday work that they do. And so when I'm working with organizations, specifically within churches, but any organization that's having some type of cultural tension or some type of cultural toxicity, I always go back to values, because essentially your culture is nothing more than shared behavior that has been learned over a period of time and has been passed down from one person in the organization to the next as the best way to solve a problem. Like, that's what culture is. Culture is learned behavior that says, hey, if we behave this way, it's going to serve our problems of internal and external adoption. Right. Mm. We're trying to function in this world. And so what's the best way for us to function in this world? Well, this culture. And we pass that down from one generation. And eventually it gets to the point where it drops out of consciousness and it just becomes assumed. And so when you have a team that is struggling with their culture, I try to dig deep and bring that subconscious learned behavior and make it conscious to say, oh, wait, this is the behavior that you're doing. And this behavior is based off of the set of values that you may not know that you're actually even that you've embraced as an organization. So are these really the values that you want to live off of or live by? And most of the time they say no. And I say, okay, so what are your values? And having that value conversation, in my opinion, is where we need to start when it comes to changing the culture. Because if you think about an iceberg, for example, and you may even know this, culture is nothing more than an iceberg. The top of the iceberg is the behavior. It's the observable behavior that you see. It's our rituals. It's our traditions. It's the way we dress. It's the way we eat. It's the stories that we tell. Below the waterline are our beliefs and values, right? Yeah. And so what we need to do, and that's the stuff that you can't see. And so what we need to do is we need to really have a conversation about what really are our beliefs and values. What are the shared assumptions, the underlying assumptions that drive our organization and that influence our behavior. And so that's where I start with an organization, is really helping them to understand the role and the power and the impact that values have. The other thing I say quickly is helping them see that, according to Edgar Schein, who's like the culture guru in academia, you know, culture and leadership are opposite sides of the same coin, right? That if you want to change culture, it starts with leadership, and leadership shapes culture. Right. And so as the leader of the organization, you cannot just abdicate that responsibility of holding people accountable for the behavior, because culture is behavior. It's shared, learned behavior that's passed down over time from one member to the next and eventually drops out of consciousness. You just can't abdicate monitoring that behavior, holding people accountable to behavior, and rewarding positive behavior to someone else. As the leader, you must be the primary person who holds accountable, rewards, you know, models the behavior that you are wanting your team to also reflect.
So I want you to think a little bit about, did I cut you off earlier? I want you to think a little bit about you leading your congregation and trying to bring about cultural change. As you did that, what resistance, and I want to specifically for you to look internally, what resistance did you experience, first of all, within yourself? As you are trying to bring about this cultural change, what resistance did you experience internally within yourself?
Yeah, I think what I've experienced is, and I think every leader is going to have to experience this, is, do I actually want to model this behavior myself?
Mm.
But like, there is this, like, I can't expect people, it's not a do what I say, not do what, don't do what I do, right? It's not one of those relationships. Like, culture is literally, they will do whatever you do. So if I want people to go the extra mile, I have to go the extra mile. If I want people to stay late, I have to stay late. If I want people to, like, if I know that in order for us to reach our destination, our vision, our North Star, we have to go all in. If I, as a leader, as the pastor, as the CEO, as the executive, as the director, am not willing to go all in myself, then it's a lost cause, right? And so I think there has to be you have to sit with that and say, okay, Seth, okay, leader, am I willing to really go all in on whatever it is? You know, if that's staying late, if that's going the extra mile, if it's, you know, if you, the leader, if you're trying to change the culture and the culture of excellence, if you're walking by trash that's in the hallway, right? You're walking by it and not picking it up. Don't expect other people to pick it up, right? Like, if you're not willing to do those small details, if you're not willing to connect and to, you know, just show that you care and whatever it is that culture is requiring of you in order to reach your goal, if you're not willing to do that, then it's, other people aren't going to do it either.
And as you talk about resistance, and I love that, the biggest resistance is trying to figure out whether or not I'm willing and committed to following through. And as we talk about resistance, we also experience resistance within the organization, from the individuals that are within. It may be passive resistance, it may be aggressive resistance, but we experience that resistance. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of discuss with you is, when you are experiencing pushback, sabotage, we just did a webinar on sabotage. We'll leave the link if you want to register for that webinar about how to manage sabotage, et cetera. But when you're experiencing pushback or sabotage as you're trying to bring about cultural change, how did you as a leader remain connected, especially with the key members of the organization, and especially those who were resisting you or pushing back against you? How did you remain connected with them and not say, you know what, I'm going to work with the people who are working with me and the rest of y'all can go jump in the lake?
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things that you have to do. Number one, you have to at least have a conversation with that person to better understand why they're resisting it. Mm. A lot of times, I think new leaders fall for this trap, or they make this mistake. They assume that because the person doesn't agree, that it's resistance, right? Just because someone doesn't agree doesn't necessarily mean it's resistance. You have to sit down with the person. You might understand that, you know what, you know, this person, like the way they see life is just through this lens, and the way they're showing up is through this lens. So it's not actually resistance. This is just their orientation. They're that person who pokes holes in everything, right? Yeah. You see it as resistance. They see it as, I'm not doing anything. I'm not resisting you. I'm just asking questions, right? And so you really have to sit down. You have to know your people, understand, okay, I noticed you said A, B, and C. What are you thinking? You know, maybe even I strongly recommend doing like a team development assessments where you are giving your team members, whether it's a DISC profile or Myers-Briggs or StrengthFinders or some type of, you know, thinking wavelength, some assessment where you can understand work styles, personality styles, and you'll see like, oh, you know, Johnny, he's not a resistor. He's a challenger.
Okay.
And as a challenger, his role on our team is to poke all the holes in our ideas to make sure that when our idea finally goes to market, it's bulletproof, right? That's his role, right? And so I think you, as leaders, you have to have those conversations. Now, if you have someone who is just being obstinate and who is really saying, you know what, it's clear they're not just a challenger, but they are really putting forth resistance, then you just have to ask the question, hey, as a team, we have decided that this is where we're going. Do you want to go here? And if they don't want to go there, then we can start having a conversation about how can we move you into an organization? How can we move you into a space that will be more in aligned with where you're trying to go?
That's a very difficult conversation to have. And as we talk about, you know, resistance, I talked about how did you stay connected with those who are pushing against you and connected with the key leaders in the organization. I want to now ask the opposite of that question, which is, how did you stand up and stand alone? More than just stand up, but how did you stand alone? Because there are times during that cultural change when a leader has to stand alone. So in the situation, especially in your pastoral leadership, how did you stand alone and show up as a more independent, separate self in challenging and trying situations when everyone was trying, when the tide of the people and the culture was moving in one direction, but you had to stand alone? Talk about that.
Yeah. You know, I've experienced that on multiple occasions, and I could give some examples if we had more time. You know, one that comes to my mind when I was pastoring was, you know, wanted to move forward with, you know, putting certain people in positions. You know, there has been lots of conversations in just multiple denominations about women in ministry and should women serve as pastors or should they not serve as pastors? And, you know, we're not going to get into that, but that's been a conversation that has affected a lot of Christian Protestant denominations within the last 10, 15 years. And so I've been a part of those conversations trying to lead my church in the past, which was more conservative, more traditional, you know, kind of more orthodoxy, more reserved, had a very literal interpretation of certain scriptures, trying to lead them into a place where, no, we need to affirm the priesthood of all believers. We need to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to exercise the gifts that God has given them. And there were several times when I felt like I was the only one standing and kind of trying to push this forward. And I just felt like I had to. I felt like it was a part of my assignment during that time. I was so committed to moving that church out of this place of, you know, great people, but just very narrow thinking and approach to life and ministry, and try to help them see that greater is possible. And so I felt like it was a part of my core values and my core calling to really stand. And so while standing was difficult, it was also easy. Right. Because it was in alignment with who I was. It wasn't like I had to, it wasn't a conflict with my own values. And I can imagine it was probably similar for Dr. King or for any, you know, civil rights leader or any leader who has had to stand against societal pressure to say, you know what? Yeah, there's sacrifice and it's difficult, but not standing is even harder.
Yes.
Right. And so once you as a leader know what you are, what your deeply held values are, then anything else is just no longer an option.
I love that. What your deeply held, what your guiding principles are, your deeply held values. That is tremendous. Raphael is going to give us our last question. Like, and both of us are saying, we could continue this conversation. I have so many more questions on here, and then questions that have come outside of this list. But for the sake of our listeners and viewers, I'm going to go ahead and let Raphael close us out with the final question.
Yeah, I mean, Seth, this has been a great opportunity to get to know you and to get to understand your ideals and what informs your leadership. I just want to touch back on one key point that you made about Robert asked you, how did you stay connected to the individuals who pushed back? And what you said was so profound. You got to get to know and understand why, what's behind that, so that you can maybe not interpret it in a way that is seeing it as necessarily them pushing back just to be pushing back, but getting to know the person. And I also heard that same theme when Robert asked you, how did you stand up? You were part of how you were, as I understand it, part of how and why you were able to stand up is because you understood where the people were coming from, who, you know, that you had to stand alone in this instance. Like, you understood it. You didn't just say, I'm just going to stand here and do this because, doggone it, I'm right. You're saying, I understand where you're coming from. I understand where you are. I understand why you are where you are. This is where I'm coming from. And I just think that, and you've talked about this throughout our conversation about how important it is for the leader to know and understand at least the perspective where they're, the people that they're leading, where they're coming from. They'll be able to get to a better place. That is a way that you change culture, right? You just got to know that. And you do that by connecting and having that human connection with them. And it's just been so refreshing to hear you not just tease that out, but to be very adamant about that component of leadership being so important. And something else that you brought up about, you know, you talked about, you know, women in leadership. And I've always said this, and I've always believed this, when we start discriminating and we keep anyone out of the conversation, we lose such a wealth of knowledge and opportunity when we do that. Someone who can see a problem that is informed by their culture, by their gender, by their, by just their, whatever their experience is that is unique and different from my own, by sidelining them, I miss a completely everything. Different perspective. I miss a journey that we could go on that we hadn't even considered.
Yeah.
So I was just glad to hear you, you know, bring out these issues, because I think they're just so important. I always say we could have been so much further as a society had we let everyone participate. I mean, we pat ourselves on the back. We talk about all of our technological achievements. We talk about where we are as a society of the world. I mean, who knows where we would have been had we let everyone participate, as opposed to just only allowing a certain segment or certain groups or a certain class to make all of the decisions and, you know, take us wherever we are, you know, now as a society. So the final question that we want to ask is just, you know, you've given a lot of counsel here, but what kind of advice would you give to a new someone who is embarking on their leadership journey? Someone who walks through your door and just says, "Hey, I want to lead. I want to be a great leader. What is it? What's the Seth Your Lorda playbook? What are the ingredients? What do I need to do to get to that, to get to the level, to be a great leader?"
That's a great question. I would probably first ask them the question, why do you want to lead? Right. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they're leading for the right reasons. Right. And I would want to hopefully coach that person up to a point where they understand that leadership is a sacred trust and that the highest leader is servant of all. Right. And so helping them to get there, once we get to that, I think that's first base. I feel like once we get to first base, then to me, I on some level, I really feel that leadership is situational. So I need to understand, okay, who are you? What are your gifts? What are your strengths? What are your passions? What are you good at? What are you not good at? And then really try to build a plan and help that individual say, okay, here are some things that you should probably work on developing. Let's sit down and come up with a game plan. First, on that game plan, that I would want to make sure that person, if they're not good at it, that they get very good at, is them being able to clearly articulate and communicate where their team is going. I feel like the two things that matter most to people when it comes to their leader is, does this person care about me, and where are we going? And if you can address those two things, I think the sky is the limit for your leadership. If people come away feeling like, I mean, yeah, they may not have had, you know, they weren't the most charismatic, or they weren't the most, you know, articulate, but I sincerely felt like they cared about me, and I never questioned where we were going. Like, I knew this is where we're going. I think those two things alone will put you light years ahead of the game, right? Now, obviously, there are some core competencies based off of your industry and based off of your specific role, you know, what level you are, that you would need to develop. But at the end of the day, if your why is solid, I would then say, okay, let's make sure that you have developed the ability to connect with people on a personal level and that you can clearly communicate, this is where we're going as a team.
Man, I can tell you this, Seth, I would have saved myself a lot of headache if I had just come to you the day that I decided I wanted to become a leader. I should have just knocked on your door, and I would have saved years and years of headache and struggle. But that being said, Seth, tell us, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about how we can get in touch with you. Should someone say, you know what, I'm not going to take the RP Soriano route and just, you know, muddle my way through life. I'm going to knock on Seth's door right now. Where do they go? I know you've got the podcast, the Vision Clarity podcast. I've seen it on LinkedIn. So I know you have that going, but how do we reach you? How does the greater world get to know Seth Your Lorda and
take advantage of the service? Yeah, I mean, you can go to my website, visionclarity360.com. You can find me on social media, Seth Your Lorda, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. You know, if Unbox to Lead has too many clients and they can't take any more business, then I'll accept you over here. Right.
You'll be once we have that problem, you will be the first one to know. Yeah, and if you haven't been notified yet, then we don't have that problem.
Yeah, but you can find me on those sites. And, you know, my specialty is leadership coaching and strategic planning. So that's what I really help. That's what I really enjoy helping teams.
And it shows.
Yeah, it definitely shows. And hopefully this will not be the last that we see of you on the show and even potentially some collaborative opportunities we might have to be able to work together, do some kind of special webinar or some kind of coursework or something like that, where we can kind of, combine what we do if that's in the future. But, kind of like a super group, a mini Avengers kind of thing or something like that.
Let's do it.
So anyway, Robert, do you have anything else you want to say before we close out?
Thank you so much, Seth, for coming on, man. We're just so glad to have you. And I want to encourage everyone to make sure that they play this broadcast back. There were so many jewels, so much teaching. One thing I didn't pick up, and I'll say this before we close, I love the fact that you are not a cliche or bumper sticker guy, that you actually think out and flesh out, an entire thought that help leaders to move forward. I appreciate it. A lot of time we live in a society that everything is about catchphrases and bumper stickers. So I appreciate your thoughtfulness. And I would encourage anyone, make sure you go to visionclarity360.com. Also check out Unbox to Lead. That's unbox2lead.com as well.
All right. Well, that concludes our show today. We definitely want to thank you, Seth Yalorda, for joining us and giving us just a wealth of wisdom. And I was just blown away by all the things that we learned and experienced with you today. So for Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano. We thank you for spending your time with us and learning more about leadership development and how to become the best leader that you can be in your life. Be sure to visit our website, www.unboxtolead.com, and we look forward to seeing you again on Unboxed.
Unboxed provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com. Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.